Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show.
Soundbites.
Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on Member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday.
And you're listening to another edition of Sound Bites. I'm going to let Mr. Francesco here settle in.
You're listening to
Sound Bites,
Francesco.
Let me just tune that down. But we want to thank you for joining us this Saturday. My name is Dave Enright.
I'm Nick Francesco.
And go ahead. You get set up there.
Yes. I think Dave thought he was going to have to do the show by himself today. Steve's still not here. I was very late.
Well, I figured, if anything, I'd wind up playing music, which I've done that before, too.
Yep.
Back in the day, I did a Thursday night show in that. So, we would have
kept
it.
Very good, by the way.
But I figured, we'll get there. But I want to thank you folks for joining us to this edition of Soundbites. But before we get going, I want to remind folks, we are a question and answer program. So please pick up the phones and give us a call, 966-5299, toll free 1-800-790-0415, because we have one rule and one rule only. The only dumb question is the one that you don't ask. So, we have a lot of fun. Don't get offended if we might pick on you a little bit. But that's the whole thing of this show. We try to make people feel comfortable in asking their questions. Because, like I said, there is no dumb question. There's a lot of stuff at times that we even get stumped at. And we have to look it up and, question, was that? Because things are constantly changing. And with that, matter of fact, there's one good one that Nick's going to talk about right now as far as a news article, which I found pretty interesting. It's like, wait a minute. Seriously?
Yeah. Okay, so Logitech CEO Hanneke Faber has shed some possible insight into first, I want to apologize for my voice. It's still pollen season out there. Every single thing that grows and is green has attacked me.
Join my world,
and
too.
And again, you can hear it in my voice. It's
the trees are having sex on your body?
everywhere. Logitech CEO Hanneke Faber has shed some light, some possible insight into the company's views on one of its most important products. Saying that the mouse built this house, Faber shared the planning behind a Forever Mouse. A Forever Mouse. A premium product that the company hopes will be the last you ever have to buy.
That I had to read twice. A Forever Mouse?
Yeah. Taking inspiration from nice watches, Logitech thinks that with a premium enough device, be it a keyboard or a mouse, consumers, beg your pardon, will be less likely to want to replace it. When asked about the Forever Mouse that she saw, Faber states that it was a little heavier, had a great software and services that you'd constantly update, and it was beautiful. But while some consumers might like the idea of a premium mouse that receives constant updates, I doubt many will appreciate the price. It seems the mouse could cost around $200 for a mouse. Recognizing that it's a challenging business model, to say the least, Faber suggested that the software becomes even more important while questioning how to nail down the appropriate service model. I am intrigued by a Forever Mouse or Forever video conferencing solution that you just update with software and create a business model around that. Another piece of the Forever Mouse puzzle is the software. Logitech uses Options Plus software, which essentially walks people through making prompts to interact with AI. But Faber says this is just the start. For now, details on a Forever Mouse are thin, but you better believe there will be a catch. The Instant Pot was a product so good that customers rarely needed to buy another one. That company went bankrupt. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Logitech is making a subscription-based Forever Mouse. Your choices are I can't wait. Intriguing? No. And that's just idiotic.
So I'll go with the last one.
So far, we have 28 votes. 16 of them say that's just idiotic. 11 say no, and 1 thinks it's intriguing. Seriously, 0 people can't wait. So 29 votes now, and
it's a mouse. Hello.
Well, exactly. And anyway, you can give us a call 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415.
You go to the dollar store and buy one, it lasts a couple of years, fine.
Exactly. That's the thing. If you spend a premium mouse, it's $30, and it lasts you 5 years. I can't see what I would pay that would be, A, cheaper than that, and B, worth it. Also, who hasn't broken a mouse?
You're not the target audience.
I can't imagine.
Six and seven figure a year salaries that they want premium things.
Right.
It doesn't matter if it's any better. It just has to say premium in the price.
People who are richer than they are smart.
Yeah. More money than cents. Is that not what they used to say?
More money than brains.
Well, same people who paid $10,000 for a gold Apple Watch that was outdated in a year.
Right.
Or $500,000 for a Philip Patek. Yeah, Rolex.
Philippe, get it right.
Yeah, Rolex is the low, cheap end of the famous watches. Don't even mention that to a watch connoisseur.
Right. Okay, I clearly can't spell Irondequoit today. Let's go to the phones. Our first caller is, I can still pronounce it, so it's Tom from Irondequoit. What's up, Tom?
Hi. Just a quick question. I have that two-factor authentication to access my Facebook account. Okay?
Yep.
I've been using it for a long time, but for the last week, when I get on it, I elect to get a text message where they send me the code.
Yeah.
All right? I've been doing it. I don't get any code. I don't get a text message. You know, I've checked. I don't think I blocked them at all.
Have they got your right phone number?
It was working. It's been working for about probably 8-9 months.
Well, check in your settings anyway, in your Facebook profile. Check to see.
Spam folder?
It's a text message.
I looked in all my folders on my iPhone.
No, this is on Facebook.
Well, here's the problem. I can't get on my Facebook account because I'm not getting the code to get on.
It sounds like maybe somebody hacked your account.
Mm-hmm. And changed something.
Mm-hmm.
Changed the phone number. So when it says it's sending a code, does it tell you the phone number it's sending it to?
Well, it shows the, what I like, you know, it's got all the asterisk, and it shows the last four numbers.
And are they your last four numbers?
They are my last four numbers.
And you're still not getting
I'm still not
text.
Getting the text.
Check your block list in the phone and see if you didn't accidentally mark that as a block.
Well, I was down at the Apple store the other day, and that was the question that I had. And they said, well, when they send out the text, they always use a different number.
Not always, no. I have strings and strings of conversations with my
colleagues. I looked, you know, at my black messages, and I think they're in chronological order.
Yeah, so it's hard to find.
Yeah, and I don't, you know, in order to text them, it's like a four-digit number, like 3265 or something.
Are you still logged in on any other device? Because you can go into your settings and get one of your temporary codes out of the settings if you're already logged in on some other device.
Well, when you say, I access it on my Windows desktop, okay?
Can you get in on that?
Pardon me?
Can you get in on that?
Well, that's what I usually use, and it says to me they're going to send the code through.
Okay, so you can't get on there either.
And then I hit something, try another way, and I ask for a text. And I don't know how to get on. I've never heard or used this notifications on Windows. And I tried, I did a little research, you know, try to look at how do you get on notifications, and I tried it. I couldn't get anything.
How about having them call you?
Who? Facebook?
I don't
Meta?
Think,
yeah,
I don't
with
think
the, instead of a text message, a phone call.
You have
I
to
would
set
like
that,
to do that, but how do I?
You have to set that up ahead of time once you're already logged in.
Well, I can't log in because,
right.
You know,
well, I thought
I
he might have asked for that, too.
Because yeah.
Usually when you're setting this stuff up,
right.
You can either do get a text message or a phone call.
Right. Most people just say text message. They don't bother setting up a phone call, so text is the only thing they can get.
Yeah.
One of the problems with text messaging is that there's no guarantee it will be delivered.
Yeah.
So sometimes if you go back an hour later and say text again, you may get the second one.
Yeah, I know one time when I wasn't getting it, and what I did is I turned off my iPhone and turned it back on, and then the messages came through. I tried that. That didn't work either. I've been trying everything, and I just can't get a message from Facebook. And I can't get on the account because I can't get the two-factor authentication code. So I'm like in between a rock and a hard place.
Yeah, I'm looking for the link to do the can't log in request to them. There's no one to call at Facebook. It's all done online.
Yeah, I sent a...
Recover your account. There it is.
Yeah, I sent a text to them explaining what's happening, but I never got a reply.
They don't answer texts? It has to be a form on the website.
On the, meta.com or something?
No, it's buried deep in Facebook. I'm putting a link now on the Soundbites website for the link.
Okay. And I'll get it off of that?
Yeah.
Yep. Go to the Soundbites website. That's okay. Bites with a Y.
Yeah, no, I have the website up now on my Windows.
So it's possible that if you keep trying, the text will eventually come through.
Yeah. Well, I've been trying for a week.
Yeah.
Multiple times.
It's possible that someone else has gotten into your account and changed your login information.
Yeah. Well, I can log in, and all the information when I log in, I think my name and my phone number are nothing's changed. It's just I don't get the text.
Well, without the text, how are you logging in?
Well, he's trying to.
Well, no, I log in, and on that two-factor authentication, you know, I put in my username, I put in my password.
Yeah, that doesn't mean that those are the ones that are actually saved in Facebook now.
Yeah.
If someone actually changed something in your settings, it might be a different username and a different password, and that's one of the reasons you can't get in. So that's why you go to recover your Facebook account. And I will tell you right now, it's a pain in the patoot.
Yeah, it is. I know it.
But you got to go through it if you want your account back.
Sometimes they make you upload your driver's license.
Driver's license.
Is that in that link that's going to be on the soundbites?
Yeah. It's facebook.com/login/identity.
Okay.
But I've added a link to the soundbites homepage.
Okay. And then when I get on that, I just enter the information that I...
Because
I got it in another account, but it went through the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, username, password, and then it automatically gave me to that two-factor authentication site.
It's a way to keep the bad guys out, but it also can keep you out if you don't get the code.
Yeah. Well, that's why I started using the two-factor authentication as another step for security.
Yeah.
Right.
But unfortunately, text messaging is the worst option for two-factor.
Okay.
Text isn't secure. Texts don't have to be delivered. So there's often cases where you don't get the text.
Yeah.
So it's better to use passkeys or an authenticator app.
Because I know on my two-factor authentication for my bank account, I always get a phone call at my home. Home phone.
You have to set that up ahead of time.
Yeah.
As what your other factors are. So once you get back into your account, you can set it up to send an email to an alternate email address, to do a voice call, to do an authenticator app, okay. So that you have multiple ways to authenticate your account.
Yeah, okay. Is it best to set it up for a phone call on my cell phone in case I'm trying to use it out of town?
Probably. If you can't, if you're not getting text messages.
Yeah, definitely.
You may not get a phone call either.
No, you might not.
Yeah. Okay.
The best is the two-factor authentication apps, the Authenticator app from Google. Facebook has their own.
Microsoft has one.
Microsoft has one. So you can set up, you can set that up, and then you get a code on your in that app that you type into Facebook, and you're in.
Oh, is that, you mean another option for Facebook?
Yeah, right. another option for two-factor, yes.
Is to get it how? Through what?
Through an authenticator app. Google makes one, Meta makes one, Microsoft makes one.
Okay.
YubiKey is a hardware authenticator app that people in high security installations like.
But in this case, having an authenticator app, you can get from the Play Store, you can get the Facebook authenticator or the Google authenticator, and from the Apple Store, you can get all of them.
Yeah. Now, a lot of that's being replaced by passkeys.
Right.
Facebook doesn't do passkeys yet, but WhatsApp does, which is owned by Facebook.
Right.
So there's hope that Facebook will start doing passkeys soon. And so what passkeys does is it uses the biometrics on your phone to authenticate you. So you log into Facebook, and then your phone says, hey, is that you? And you do your Face ID or your Touch ID, and the phone says, yep, that's him, and sends that back to Facebook and lets you log in.
Yeah. I know when I was doing this, I was getting a notification. When I was be able to get the text message to get on Facebook, I would get a notification when I was on Facebook asking me or saying that somebody, you know, tried to log into your account on
an unknown device. Yep.
Something we don't recognize. And I always say, you know, remember this browser, but they never do.
Right.
I don't know if it's some security thing I have on my Windows or what, but
you're probably blocking the cookie it's setting because everyone blocks their cookies because they can be bad.
Yeah. Right. That's what I usually do. I usually clear out my cookies or, you know, on my iPad, I block the cookies.
Yeah. Right, and that's why Facebook can't remember you.
Well, yeah, I know I used to, when I ever got on Facebook on my iPad, I used to have to turn off the black cookies in order to get on it.
Right, exactly.
But that's why I usually do it on my desktop Windows.
Right, but yeah. Prevents Facebook from remembering who you are.
Yeah, and if you use the Facebook app on your mobile device, your phone or your tablet, then you don't have to worry about cookies at all because you're directly into the Facebook app.
Right.
Okay. Well, I did try to, I got the app, put it on my laptop or on my iPad, and same problem.
The first time you log in, you have to get the code.
Yeah.
Because this is a new device.
Yeah. Right.
Also, are you logging in those times of day when there's a lot of traffic? So
Usually I do it later at night.
Yeah, well, that's probably when most of the traffic is happening because people are getting on Facebook in the evening.
Yeah.
If you could try it, say, in the morning or around noon or, not noon, people are doing it at lunch.
Yeah.
So around 10 or 11, say, or 2 or 3.
That's part of the problem. Since Facebook is global, it's always lunch somewhere.
Yeah, well, that's true.
Exactly.
But the idea is that in his area, he may be running into too much texting traffic.
Yeah.
And if he does it at a time of day when the texting traffic is low, he may get his code.
Are you getting texts from other people?
Yeah. On my phone and on my iPad.
Okay.
Well, yeah, the people, I mean, on iPad, I haven't, if somebody that's not, doesn't have an iPhone, you know, they send me a message. It has to go to my phone first, and then it gets linked over to my iPad.
Sure.
But I've been getting messages from other people.
Yeah. Try first logging in at a time of day when you think maybe not a whole lot of other people are doing texting, and see if it comes through. Who is your provider?
I have Greenlight.
No, I'm sorry, your phone. your cellular provider?
Oh, Verizon.
Yeah.
We've had a lot of problems with customers on Spectrum Mobile not getting two-factor text codes.
Okay.
I don't know who Spectrum uses.
Right.
But try those things
and let us know.
Okay. I'll try to get that link off the Soundbites site, correct?
Okay. And jump through the hoops they want you to jump through.
Now, when you were talking about that WhatsApp, that's, you know, I'm pushing 78 years old, so I'm, you know, sometimes you're talking over my head.
Well, WhatsApp is Facebook's own messaging program.
Okay. Oh, what's it is. Okay.
Yeah. It's one of Facebook's own messaging programs. They bought it. It's real big in Europe. But Facebook Messenger is their other messaging program, and they're not compatible with each other.
Right. Okay. But I can get that off of the App Store on my iPad?
The Facebook app itself, yes.
Okay.
And what's
I do
that?
Have the Facebook app. I have it on my iPad now.
Right. So then you don't need to worry about cookies.
Okay. But then, okay, I still got to get around. I mean, if I use it on my iPad, would you suggest, if I do get in, to turn off the two-factor authentication, or should I keep that?
You should keep it, but use a different one, or add multiple two factors.
Okay.
Add an email recovery factor.
Phone number.
If you have a second phone number, you know, like a spouse's number, maybe you can get it to go to them.
Okay.
I have seen most of the time once you turn on Authenticator, it stops every other.
Well, set up a second Gmail account.
Yeah, you can send it to an email.
Okay.
There are different ways to do two-factor.
Yeah. Now it says when I first log in, it says they sent me the code to notifications on my PC.
Yeah.
But I can't. How do I get the notifications on my Windows PC?
You click the notification icon at the right end of the toolbar.
Okay. Okay.
It should pop. It's not toolbar. What is it on Windows?
Whatever they call it.
The bottom taskbar.
Taskbar.
The taskbar. Does that have to be entered onto the taskbar, or is it automatically there?
What version of Windows do you have?
I'm pretty up to date. I can't tell you.
10, 11?
10 or 11.
7? Yeah. Yeah, it's there by default. Any notification will pop out of that the upper right corner of the screen for a couple of seconds to let you read it, and then it hides again.
Okay.
But if you click the notification icon in the bottom right corner of the taskbar, then it will show you all the notifications that are waiting.
Okay. Does it come on both 10 and 11?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll look, just ask how to enter the notifications icon on the taskbar.
It kind of looks like a square chat bubble instead of a round chat bubble to the right of the clock.
I think when I was doing my research, they said if I hit the Windows logo and the letter N, it would, you know, show
bring up notifications.
Yeah.
But I do that and nothing happens.
All right. Well, take a look at the actual notification icon in the corner.
Bottom right corner.
To the right of the clock.
Okay. All right. Thank you for your help.
All right. Good luck, Tom.
Yeah, I need it.
Yeah.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye. All right. That's the Facebook. Listen, for everybody else, we talked about how there are recovery codes in Facebook. Go get them. Go get them right now. Save them to somewhere where you will know where they are in Google Keep or wherever. So you can get back in if you need to. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on the truly great and truly grateful to you that we are member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 36 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites. I moved my clock, and now I'm always looking in the wrong place for it.
What'd you do that for?
Because it was blocking something over here. I got a little clock that's always in front. and it's blocking some stuff over here. It doesn't block anything, but now I have to get used to it being there. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Dave from Canandaigua, New York. What's up, Dave?
Oh, well, all kinds of bad stuff, but I do have a comment for you about this Logitech idea. I think a good name for that campaign would be the mouse that didn't roar.
The Duchy of Grand Endwick.
Know that movie.
We're ending your program.
I like it. I like it a lot.
Okay. So anyway, I got more trouble with the Zoom sessions that I run. There are cymbals and bells, and those sounds are not being transmitted out to the Zoom audience. Voice is generally, I have played with every sound setting I can get at, and I can't quite figure out why those sounds are not being sent through. Is it a Windows driver, or is it something in Zoom? I've seen complaints on the Zoom boards about trouble with stuff like that, but I'm looking for any ideas.
Right. If you try, so you're trying to do local sounds, right?
Well, okay, we have a soundboard, and the sound from the microphones goes to the speakers in the room, also into the from a USB out of the soundboard into the computer.
You need to mix those. You need to mix the mic and the soundboard into a single input because Zoom can only recognize one input.
Right, right. Well, everything's been working fine until a couple of weeks ago. You know, all the sounds were fine. But now all of a sudden, just the high-pitched stuff doesn't go through.
Did somebody change your mixer settings?
No, it's not. It's not in the mixer because if the sound in the room is fine, but anybody on Zoom can't hear the bells.
Right. And they used to be able to?
Yeah.
Well, sounds like something in the mixer.
Something in the mixer changed.
Or a cable's loose, and that mixed audio isn't making it into the computer.
Right.
Because the voices make it out to the audience.
Well, yeah, but that's your microphone. You have to mix the microphone as one input and the computer audio as a second input, and you have to mix those and combine them into one input for Zoom and pick that one input in the Zoom settings.
The person who's speaking into the microphone, when they clash the cymbals, they hear the person speaking, but they don't hear the cymbals.
Yes, that's exactly what we're saying.
Because your Zoom is set to only see from the microphone. If you want it to see from the microphone and the computer, you need to combine those two inputs into a single input and feed that input into Zoom. Now, on the Mac, I use a program called Audio Hijack for that. I don't know on Windows.
There's a driver I forget where it came from, that... it's the USB audio codec. I think it's probably built into Windows. So it takes the USB out of the soundboard and sends it into the computer. And this has never been a problem until, a couple weeks ago. I'm not sure exactly when it started.
Yeah, something changed somewhere. You may need to reinstall that codec.
Some other codec is in there. When you go down into Windows in the Device Manager and under Sound, does it display what codecs are there?
Well, I presume it does. I'm in Canandaigua with the computers in the city. I was just wondering if you guys had heard anything in particular about this, because I'm going to have to go and probably see if I can update any of the audio related drivers.
The thing I would start with is to take a look at the audio profile in Zoom. In the audio profile under Zoom optimized audio, one of the things is background noise suppression.
Turned it off.
And it's off completely.
Yep.
I didn't know there was an off setting for that. I know it goes auto low note. Auto, low, medium, and high.
Yeah, it's as off as I could make it. Yeah, like I said, I've gone through every audio setting in Zoom. I've even gone to the web portal to look, but it's all the same. There's no real difference. And anyway, so I do have, I've got other strategies I can, I'm going to try. I have somebody with a Mac, so I might be able to swap out the computers. Swap in a Mac where my Windows 10 machine is and see if the problem goes away.
Yeah, on my newer Macs, there's the built-in Apple program audio MIDI setup where I can mix my headphone and my microphone and my speaker audio into one input, and then in Zoom, I say use the aggregate device for all the inputs.
Yeah, that's basically what I'm doing. The USB audio codec is just taking everything out of the soundboard.
Yeah.
And soundboard picks up all the sounds, right? The mic, you know, everything the mic says, and they come through the speakers. They just don't make it. Some of the sounds don't make it out to Zoom, and others do, which is quite odd.
Oh, wait a minute.
I suspected Zoom, but.
So some sounds make it and some sounds don't?
Yes, that's correct. You can hear somebody's voice, but you can't hear the bell.
Oh, well, oh, okay, yeah, that's two different sound sources.
No, it's the same.
If some bells didn't work, if some bells worked and some bells didn't work, that would be a different problem.
So are you saying that the person who's speaking is using the microphone in the computer?
No, they're using a microphone that's attached to the sound to our sound system.
Right. So what's working is the stuff that's attached to the sound system. What's not working is the interface between the computer where you're trying to make sounds and the sound system.
So, you want to check which microphone Zoom is set to use and make sure it's set to the mixer.
It's the USB audio codec. Okay, that's the input that the computer gets. That's the sound that comes from our sound system. Okay, and again, everything in the room works fine, but, I mean, this is the thing, is somebody's voice works fine, but then when they ring a bell, you can't hear that.
Right, okay, so I'm still confused.
Me too.
Is the bell is coming from the computer?
Or is it a physical bell you're pushing? Push your bell, Dave.
It's an actual bell you ring, you know, a little ding-ding, yeah.
Oh, okay.
It makes that sound, but it's a bell you ring in your hand. Right.
So it's a physical bell.
Also,
that's the noise canceling, trying to cancel that background noise.
Yep.
So what we often see in Zoom and on the lounge is background noise is magnified. Someone rustles a piece of paper, and everyone goes ah.
Yep. How do they go?
Ah.
Yeah. Right. Well, I've diddled with every setting in Zoom as far as audio goes, and it's not. You know, it's just not behaving. And I suspect I think Zoom did something.
It's not impossible.
Was there a recent update to Windows that may have done something?
Well, it could be. You know, it's hard to fight off updates from Windows these days.
Yeah.
And I've updated Zoom. Let's get to something more important. I was trying to order a sub from DeBella's.
Yeah.
And they changed their page and all their e-commerce. And it turns out that, you know, I use Bitwarden to log into places. Love it. But when Bitwarden fills something in, their site, and I think one other site, rejects it. Says, you know, I get some kind of a problem. And I think that it only happens in Firefox, near as I can tell, that there's something going on either with Bitwarden or with Firefox or with the website itself, that when Bitwarden fills in your credentials and you try and you hit log in, it fails. I'll get either an invalid password or, you know, some kind of error message or whatever. Ever hear that one?
Often enough when a page changes, many of the password managers. Any plugin in general will lose track of where it essentially knows which fields to fill out. Right? But if those fields get moved, one gets added, one gets moved somewhere else, whatever, whatever. The order is different, and things like Bitwarden get confused, and the only way to fix that is to delete that entry in Bitwarden and reapply everything directly with the keyboard, and then tell Bitwarden to remember the new way.
And that may be why it works in another browser, because it's that browser is looking at it differently.
Right.
Okay, I'll try that. But I mean, everything appears to be filled in properly. You know, the my name and password are look right, but when I hit the button, it fails.
Interesting.
Oh, well. Well, okay, I've had enough.
All right, good luck, Dave.
Yeah, thanks.
Let us know how that works out.
I will.
Thanks. Yeah, so online video sessions are...
interesting conundrum.
They're just amazing. There's so much great technology going on. And then, you know, it's the last mile problem. The last thing that happens is it goes to a 10-year-old computer that hasn't been maintained well. You know, it's very... every time, you know, I do Mastermind Lounge, which is a Zoom-like product, and every time there are people who have absolutely no problem getting in whatsoever, nothing is a problem, everything works perfectly, and there are other people who can't figure it out for the life of them. And I know it's not the project, because those two people, it's not the product, because those two people are in the same session. It seems to many of us like video conferencing is simple. You click a thing, you click a thing, you click a thing. But in reality, it's very complex.
Depending on your operating system, the machine, what version of the operating system you're using.
Well, that's it. It's the last mile is generally the problem.
Video cards and sound cards.
Which browser you're using? Sometimes it, like some browser versus another.
Yep. There's a lot of variables.
I once spent 10 minutes on it with a guy. I said, what computer are you using? He said, my Mac. I said, okay. Then you go here, you go here, you go here, you go here. He said, there none of those exist. 10 minutes later, I said, are you by any chance on your phone? Yeah, it's my Mac phone.
Oh.
Thank you. Thank you. We can talk now. I can fix this problem.
They
don't give you the whole story. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Fred from Rochester, New York. What's up, Fred?
Hey, just a comment to the previous caller using the Bitwarden.
Yeah.
I use EnPass, and there are maybe two websites that EnPass puts in the correct username and password, but it says it's incorrect. If I copy it out of EnPass and paste it, it works. So there's definitely something wrong with those two websites.
Oh, very interesting. Thank you. That makes a lot of sense. It may not be his end. It may be their end.
Yeah.
And you're right.
It's definitely their end because I do some shopping on eBay, and eBay, I can't use directly. I can't use the EnPass. I use the EnPass, but I have to copy it out of EnPass and paste it in.
By hand.
Yeah. Or, yeah, just, you know, Control C.
Yeah, right. So, Dave, if you're still listening, and of course you are, give that a try on the Dabelas page. See if that does it for you. That makes sense.
There's something funky in that webpage.
Yep. Makes sense.
All right, that's all I got for today so far.
So far. Thanks, Fred.
I'm listening.
All right, thanks. Yeah, it's... It used to be fairly simple. you had...
Like you said, used to.
You had two things. You had an operating system, which was a fairly simple one.
Mm-hmm.
Comparatively, and you had an application. If there was a problem, it was one of two places. Now you've got 200 or 300 drivers, 5 or 6 different connections, it's exponentially.
Well, when we first started out, to take it back, is you just had a monitor, a computer sitting underneath that, and a keyboard.
Right.
You did not have the mouse, the advanced graphics card, the graphical interface that Windows now provides. You didn't have all that fluff. It was just literally basic computing.
Yeah. As
a matter of fact, you didn't even have CD-ROM drives.
Well, right. This week somebody posted a picture of I'm This Old, and it was the original Mac. And I thought, puppy.
Yeah.
So I posted a picture of a Northstar CPM machine.
Ah, there you go.
And said, I'm older than this, but this is the oldest picture I could find. And it ran CPM, and that was keyboard, monitor, computer.
Yep.
Done.
That's it.
Done. Yeah, did everything at the keyboard. There was no mouse. There were no graphics.
No. Everything was
ASCII graphics. You could do ASCII graphics.
But that was basically all off of what we called a command line. A lot of folks don't know what the heck that is, but it used to be just orangish lettering on a black screen.
Yeah.
And you sat there and typed commands, and more text would pop up. And you'd select a menu option. From there, you'd go on down to the next option. But there was no graphical interface, folks. It was all text.
And you had to basically memorize all the commands.
Yeah.
Well, and even when you had something like WordPerfect, where you could bring up the list of commands, you had to remember how to do that.
Yep.
Right? But at one place I worked, we had word processing machines for everybody. We replaced them all with WordPerfect machines in what was then, in those days, called the secretarial pool. And I got a call from one of the ladies, and it was while we were transitioning from, I believe, amber to green, not green to amber. And she said, my monitor died. I said, okay, I'll bring you a new one. What color is it? Dead silence at the other end of the line. Well, it's kind of beige. Okay, I'll bring one of each. Don't worry about a thing. I'll bring one of each. But that's what people had, and they worked in text all day long. Now, on the other hand, WordPerfect was that organization where I was talking to the rep one day, and I said, you know, I just bought this new printer, and you guys don't have a driver for it, and it makes me sad. I'm sure you're working on it. He said, what printer is it? So I told him the model number. The next day, I get an email from one of their programmers. We went out and bought that model printer. Please try this driver. It's back in the days when you had to add the driver.
Yeah.
And I tried the driver. It had one error. One thing didn't work well. I gave them my feedback. The next day, he sent me another driver, and it worked perfectly.
Corrected the error.
And I said, what do I owe you for this? He said, no, you helped us out.
Yeah.
You got us a new model printer to use. It's a brand new printer. It's popular. We have a driver for it.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I was a fan of WordPerfect from that day on. There's no question of that. They were number one on my list. And many, you know, we sold back in the day, before the Xerox Star, word processors were text. If they weren't outright typewriters with paper, they were text.
Mm-hmm.
And so we sold a lot of WordPerfect computers with WordPerfect on them to replace very expensive word processors. All right, back to the phones.
Well,
we've got
before that, on that same line, we've got a customer who brought a 30-year-old computer in and wants to get all their data off of it and wants printouts. So we're trying to find, if anybody knows, I need a Mac-compatible serial printer.
Wow, good luck there.
Yeah. That worked. So we had an image writer at the office that worked.
Sure.
But the ribbon was all dried up.
Yeah.
And it took forever to print music scores. So it's a music customer had written. And so we're trying to, it's a little fun and a little frustrating trying to find all that old stuff.
Can you pull the files out?
Yes.
We'll talk about
it. Can anything read Encore files today? A 30-year-old, Encore was the replacement. Music Time.
We'll find out shortly. But we're going to go to the phones. We've got a couple minutes to talk to Mark from Greece. What's up, Mark?
Interesting problem I'm having. I'll be on the, I'm using Windows 11 on a HP computer with 32 gigabytes of RAM. So there's a little rundown there. And I'll be using the computer, and all of a sudden, it'll freeze. My mouse, everything, and it's a USB mouse. And then it comes back, and I lose all my USB stuff, and then it all reloads.
Wait, what do you do?
It freezes, and yeah. Then it comes back, and then all of a sudden it'll say, oh, you connected a new hard drive, you know. What do you want to do with it? You know, not that it wants to set it up again, but how do you want to, you know, view the files? I have three drives on there, and each one of them does the same thing in succession when this freeze happens.
Okay, so the first thing I would do, Mark, is tell you to back up.
Mm-hmm.
Back up everything constantly. Because what it sounds like is, since it's happening to all three drives, it sounds like your drive controller is dying.
Wow.
Now, these days, the drive controller is mounted on the motherboard. So it's is this an HP desktop or laptop?
Desktop.
Okay, it might still be connected.
Surface mounted.
Yeah, it's probably mounted to the motherboard itself, so it may be time to replace that motherboard.
Okay, because it's a new computer, so it's still under warranty.
Perfect. Get it back to them immediately.
Okay.
Back up everything and get it back to them immediately.
Shouldn't be doing that.
Okay. All right. That sounds like a plan, then. I'll have to contact them.
It does sound like a plan, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
Coming from us, that's a surprise.
It sounds like a good plan.
All right. Well, that's even more surprising. Thanks, Mark.
Thank you.
Good luck.
Yep.
Yeah, maybe when we come back, I'll tell you my hardware story over the last few weeks. It was distinctly gut-wrenching time for me. All right, that music tells us the first hour of this show is now history. But you can help us make history in the future by giving us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. We'll be back in just a few minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and with you. It is 59 minutes after the hour. You are listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's Soundbites, right here on the truly great and truly, truly grateful to you that with your support and your soul support, we are still on the air because we are member-supported. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Get yourself a beverage and a snack, and we'll see you on the other side.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
Celebrating 50 years on the air in Rochester.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And people don't believe that this is live radio, folks.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we're hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Folks can only see, you know, this studio. I mean, we have a ton of space. I mean, it's a nice cozy, and I'll put that term, cozy situation that we have here. And that's why, again, I periodically get on the rant, which, sorry, it's just the way it is with two hearing aids. People call in. And I've got two other gentlemen in here that are screaming into microphones, which were less than 3 feet away. And if, you know, I don't always hear your name correctly, there are some factors in that. So don't get frustrated if I ask you to repeat your name a couple times. And, oh, do me a favor. Speak up!
Just because Dave has to whisper doesn't mean you do.
Yeah, I have to whisper because otherwise it would go out over the air and, you know, you wouldn't want me hearing you cussing out you for not speaking up going over the airwaves. I mean, it's just the way it is.
All right, I have a story.
Go for it.
It's not quite an Uncle Dave.
Oh, wait a minute.
Got to find where that button went.
All right, kiddies, it's that time again. Get your footy jammies on, grab a mug of hot cocoa, sit Indian style in a semicircle around the rocking chair, because if we can slap me awake, it's time for Story Hour with Uncle Nick.
Go for it.
Okay. Man, I pulled that out.
Yeah, you did.
2 weeks ago yesterday, I was just sitting down at my desktop to write the news for Saturday, and my computer died. Completely died. I did not panic. I have a laptop that is also running Linux. So in about, and you know, most of my stuff is up on the web, and everything is backed up in a dozen different places. So I didn't have a problem. I just set up the laptop in about 15 minutes. And wrote my news. It was all good. Then I sat down with the desktop itself, and I thought, it just feels to me like it's the power supply. Now, I bought this 6 years ago as a refurb, and it's about 8 years old, so it owes me nothing, this computer. And I bought a very high-end model, so it would last me this long. And it owes me nothing, but I thought, what the heck? I'll just buy a new power supply. So I get on Amazon. I tried several places. Amazon had them in stock and exactly the model I needed. Not like, this is kind of close.
Yeah.
Oh, no, thank you. It is exactly the model that I had.
And you got to have enough of the connectors on the back, because they'll sell generic power supplies that are for just that, generic build boxes,
right?
But they don't have enough connectors, and then you're usually adding adapters that will then piggytail off, so you can, instead of just connecting one, be able to connect two.
Right, and in fact, the one I have, even though I've got three devices on it, I've still got two or three connectors.
Mm-hmm. That's a good one. Use. Yep.
So anyway, I ordered this thing, and I ordered it, and it says, now again, I looked in a lot of places for this exact model. This is the only place that had them. It said 6 to 8 weeks for delivery. Okay.
Slow boat.
Still coming on a slow boat from China. Okay, I get that. So I order it, and then every day, like an obsessive maniac, I'm checking the tracking, right? And, it, you know, first day it says left Shenzhen.
Wherever, yeah.
Picked up by carrier. And it stayed picked up by carrier for a week and a half. And I thought, okay, I can't keep looking. I'm just making myself crazy.
That mule drive cart just doesn't go that fast to the shipping yard.
Right. It's still 4 to 6 weeks before it gets here. I just got to stop looking. Thursday morning, my Alaska pops up, and I said, what's my notification? You have one new notification. A package has been delivered from Amazon Shopping for Nick. No. Exactly. So I run to my computer and I look at the tracking, delivered. I don't know how, maybe they caught a good tailwind. I don't know what happened. but a tsunami picked them up and took them there. I don't know what happened. But so I finally got I got my desktop, and you know me, I will fearlessly attack any software problem you give me.
You want to see this guy sweat?
I don't touch hardware.
Oh,
I do.
I've
not
seen
touch
it
hardware.
Live, folks. It is a sight to behold. I never saw somebody get so nervous.
Just opening
up the side panel.
Whoa!
He gets very faint at heart.
So exactly. When it comes to hardware, I'm not good. But I pulled the thing out, pulled off the side panel. Undid all the screws and all the connectors, memorizing where everyone went.
That's the trick.
That's the trick. And then spent 20 minutes getting this friggin' power supply out. It was stuck, but I finally got it out. The new one slipped in like greased pig. Boom, done, in. I attached everything. I put in all the plugs in the right places. I put the back panel on. I plugged in all the things. Said novenas to everybody who's ever died ever, and then I hit the power button and up it came. And then I thought this is great. And then I thought, wait a minute, how many hard drives do I have in this thing? Looked, oh, they're both there. Okay, now I'm happy. CD-ROM works. Okay. What didn't work at first was the keyboard. I forgot to plug it in. I had, you know, six things plugged into the back, and just I forgot the
that'll
keyboard.
Do it.
But it works again, and I did it all by my little self, and I am just very excited. Brand new power supply, and it made me happy. I just wanted to share that with everybody. I am not a hardware guy, and you know, as I've gotten older, the arthritis and the neuropathy make it hard to remove, replace, and keep track of all those little screws.
Yeah,
you know,
we years ago I found thread spools, storage bins.
Oh yeah,
at Joann Fabrics.
Oh sure,
12 of them in a nice little plastic container. Works fine for separating all my screws. I know a lot of people use egg cartons, but I need a top on my screws, and even then I've still spilled them.
Yes.
I was joking with one of my RC guys the other day that I'm not much of a builder anymore. I used to be huge into building with, you know, Lincoln Logs and Legos and plastic models. I'm not much of a builder anymore because all day long I tear apart computers and put computers back together with little tiny pieces. I don't want to build anything anymore.
Right. No, I get it.
I had him fix the landing gear on my B-17. And
oh, I'm sorry.
And it worked fine, and then I landed hard again, and he had to fix them again. Sorry, Yuri. We're going to have a squadron of at least five B-17s at our air show.
Which means at least five he's going to have to fix after they land again.
I guess. Three of them are his. I don't know. He really likes B-17s.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Fred, back from Rochester, New York. What's up, Fred?
Hey, me again. I tried to give Dave a message, but he switched over too fast. One of the things I wanted to tell him is don't sweat having to ask my name several times or where I'm from several times. It doesn't hurt my feelings. I don't take offense to it. I totally get it.
Yep.
So,
well, you're one of the good ones, Fred.
So anyway,
appreciate it.
That said, I was reading about some file encryptions. And someone had suggested before putting it up to the cloud, encrypt it, put it in a package. And they talked about Veracrypt and Cryptomator. If you have any opinions on those or recommendations for, against, or something else?
Yeah, Veracrypt is the open source encryption software that came out of TrueCrypt. And it's very good, Mac, Windows, Linux. And if you are putting information on a public disk somewhere, it's best to encrypt it first, pre-internet encryption.
Uh-huh.
Well, most OSs have encryption built in to their own local drives, and I don't like that a lot because an encrypted hard disk is a little more fragile and easier for the encryption to get corrupted. So all the data on your hard drive is stored as a blob of noise that turns into files when you give it the encryption key. But that noise is noise. It makes it much harder to recover if there's a problem, much harder to get your files back if something goes wrong.
And the only time it actually protects your system is if somebody steals the laptop while it's off.
Yeah.
Because once you log in, you've decrypted the drive. So if you get a virus, it still works.
Okay. Yeah.
And we often will say, encrypting turns your data into a blob of noise that nobody can get without the password. Not even you.
Right.
Right.
But if you are trying to send a file, send a file to someone, it gets encrypted in transit. Almost anything encrypts in transit. But if it's being stored somewhere before the other person gets it, it's a good idea to encrypt it first, just in case. The problem then becomes, how do you give them the password? So you have to give them a password through a different channel.
Right, yeah.
So, you know,
I try to use when I'm sending files, I try to use Gmail to Gmail, which is encrypted both ends, as I understand it. But this was talking about if you're storing something up on the cloud, you know, there's super paranoid types, which, I get it. There was talking about even before you put it up to a cloud service, so I use pCloud, I use some Dropbox, but usually only for my money dance, and I use my Gmail account for storage, and this person was saying to use an encryption to send it to there. I just thought, I don't know.
Most of the services say, especially the well-known and bigger services, say the data is encrypted at rest on their service. But most of them can get to the data themselves because it's on their server.
Right.
So having it encrypted before it leaves your computer is safest.
Okay.
And you can use something as simple as Zip, and you can encrypt files with Zip.
And add a password.
At that point, the file is only as secure as your password.
Right.
So make it a good one. But you don't need to buy or even download some other product, because Zip will do it. Even Windows version of Zip will do it.
And the Mac Disk Utility can make encrypted disk images of a folder, even if you want.
Zip on Linux?
GZip.
Okay.
GZip.
GZip. It's the same. It's GNU Zip. It's GZip is Zip.
Okay. And then one other totally non-related question is on the website you had a link to a Tor browser, and I saw a link to it and whatever, but I didn't see any kind of recommendations better than, worse than, ranking them in any order between the myriad browser.
Well, the big thing with Tor is it's designed to be used with the Onion network. So, and that's what Tor actually stands for, the Onion network. And the Onion network is a series of layers, a series of...
Like an ogre?
Like an onion. and so the idea is that the Tor browser securely goes through multiple links before it gets to where you're going and then sends it back to you. The idea being that it will obfuscate the place you're coming from.
So if you're trying to hide where you're going and where you've been from your internet provider,
Or you're trying to hide where you are from the other end.
From the other end, yeah.
Right, so if you're, you know, bad guys use it to steal things, and good guys use it to be private.
Okay. Any better than DuckDuckGo, DuckDuck browser?
Well, it depends. Depends on who you ask
and how you define better.
Right.
Yeah.
Tor people will say there's nothing better than Tor.
Of course.
So, you know, it is out there. It is a good product.
Tor's more for hiding your location rather than something like Duck.
Right.
Duck Browser is for blocking cookies and blocking tracking.
Right. That's what I was about to say. Duck and Brave will both block cookies so that the other end may still know your IP address.
The Brave has Tor built into it now if you want.
Right.
Well, that's one thing I've gotten in the habit. If I'm going to go starting to search for something, you know, I've gotten tired of using the Chrome browser and that I wind up, or, you know, using Google search, I go over to DuckDuckGo, do it through there. Then when I come back to my normal Chrome browser, I'm not getting inundated with all those other stupid ads just because I went looking, say, for shoes.
Right.
Or this or that, you know, because the minute you do, all of a sudden you're inundated with all these darn ads. It's like, yeah, no, I just go to...
You wouldn't believe the ads I get, because my wife calls me up. She's at market. She says, can you look this up? Can you look that up? Can you look the other thing up? And they are so disparate and so way out there that I get ads for stuff that I will never use.
Yeah, in a lifetime.
I look good in a dress. I think we were
that. We've established that. Yes, but you do.
I'm not buying any.
But still, no, that's why I've gone to now going to DuckDuckGo and doing searching there. And then just for my everyday stuff, I'll go back to the regular Chrome
browser. And Brave
browser
is very similar. And as Steve said, I know that Brave has the Tor browser in it. I don't know that the Duck browser has Tor built in.
Okay. Well, I got some more playing around to do. Try it out.
There you go.
Good luck. Have fun.
I'll look up something obscure and see how much of it comes back to me.
Right, exactly. Tor is in the Brave browser, so if you use Brave and turn on Tor, you should be okay.
Yeah, I totally get it where you're looking up something for somebody else. Somebody asks me a question, and I'll say, I don't know the answer, but, like, you know, I'll throw it in a Google search and see what comes up, and then they, oh, okay, well, this is what I found. And
yep. And the next thing you know, you're getting ads for it.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks again.
No, thank you.
All right, bye-bye.
I will say that not only do I look good in a dress, but the fact is that my ankles just can't handle high heels anymore. So he stopped sending me the ads. Google, please stop sending me the ads.
Yeah. So wasn't there a controversy a few years ago when government agencies were found to be running Tor exit nodes?
Yes.
So it didn't really hide you because they knew where you were?
Right. If you hit those exit nodes.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're not safe from everyone everywhere. There's nothing that does that. But in terms of everyday privacy, I guess is the way to put that. In terms of everyday privacy, something like Tor used in the Brave browser should keep you fairly secure. And at some point we should talk about duck.com, and we'll talk about that in a minute for email. But we'll go back to Tom, who's calling from Irondequoit again. What's up?
Yeah, you wanted me to update you. I had that Facebook login problem.
Yeah.
I went to the website that was, or went to the link that was on your website. I was on that before, okay? And one of the options, I mean, they sent me a code. I got it on my email. I entered it. It goes back to the login page. One of the other options is they asked. Now, this is where it makes me a little bit worried. They wanted me to send two forms of ID.
Yep.
My passport or my driver's license. And I won't do that. I don't want to do that.
Then you'll never get back into your
account. Yeah, unfortunately...
You have to prove your identity. You have to prove it's you getting into that account and not someone else claiming to be you.
Okay.
Because of all the identity theft nowadays.
So that would be my only option?
Yep.
Okay. Because then I went to the Facebook app, and I got on that WhatsApp, with that WhatsApp, and it still wants a login code, which
of course
I don't have.
Sure. No, I get it.
If you're logging in on any new device with any new app, it's going to want the code.
Yeah, you really are going to have to jump through the hoops that Facebook wants you to jump through. And I'm sorry, but you have to.
Or start a new account and ignore the old one.
Right. Those are your only choices.
Okay, if I start a new account, is there any way to bring over all the friends list?
Nope. Nope. All you can do is...
In fact, that's actually a big problem on Facebook. Someone will create a lookalike account and use your public friends list to trick your friends into joining the fake account and then start spamming them for money.
Yeah, that's what I was worried about. So the only option to keep it would be to send them the...
Your identification. Make sure you're at Facebook.com. Click on the little padlock to make sure it really is Facebook.com. It's just a way to make sure you are where you think you are.
And then follow the instructions. I'm sorry, but there you are.
Okay. And would you have any qualms about doing that?
I've done it.
Oh, you have? Okay.
Yeah. My account, they forgot me.
Yeah, me too.
Twice, as a matter of fact. And both times I had to jump through their hoops, and I'm back on. It's all fine.
I didn't get mine back because... got hacked. Somebody sitting in Albany.
Yeah. And that's, again, for everybody else, go to Facebook and download those recovery codes. Make sure you have them. So if you ever do need to recover your account, you've already got them on your computer somewhere. Stick them on a thumb drive and hide it somewhere. Whatever you do with them.
And I posted a link for setting up and finding your recovery
codes. Go onto the Facebook account.
Right, but you have to already be logged into your account to do this.
Yeah, and then you download what, a recovery code?
Yeah, you get 10 recovery codes that you can type in instead of the code that isn't coming through text.
Oh, you use the same code all the time?
No, you get 10 one-time codes.
Okay, all right.
And you only get 10.
Oh, I see, okay.
Well, it said you can generate more after you use those 10.
In case there's a problem.
Right, but you have to already be logged in to find those codes.
Yep, okay. But they're just to be used in
an emergency like this one. This.
Pardon me?
An emergency like this one.
Oh, yes, exactly. Okay. Well, thanks for your help.
Yep. Good luck.
Yeah, they're kind of intended for your traveling. You don't have your own phone with you, and you want to check on, you know, like the hotel computer.
Right.
Never do that, though.
Never do that.
Who knows what's on that hotel computer and who follows behind you on that hotel computer?
The real problem here is that every piece of advice we give people for retrieving their account is a piece of advice that goes entirely against security.
Yep.
Every single one of them. But there's no real way around that. Download those codes for all of you listening today. Download those codes immediately and save them somewhere.
Should explain where to find them.
Well, we've got a link on the list.
Okay.
Make a sentence out of that. And the other thing you should do is download an authenticator. Like we said, Google has one, Microsoft has one, Facebook has their own. But you can use any one of them with all these products. And
that's under how two-factor authentication works on Facebook.
Right.
You pick what your second factor is.
Right. And one of the factors you can pick is an authenticator. And that sends a code to the authenticator, which isn't the same as a text message and is much, much, much more likely to come through. So that's the thing you should do. That's the thing you should deal with for those of you who can be in your accounts. Now, you've got to be able to download that authenticator from your App Store, Play Store, whatever it is, and then you've got to set it up correctly. But once you do that, follow the instructions. Read each one twice before you do anything. And once you've got it, from now on, anytime you want to do two-factor authentication, it'll come to that authenticator, and you'll be in much better shape. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. You are listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's Soundbites. Take another little bio break, relax, enjoy yourself, but come on back for another half hour of Soundbites right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you in just a couple of minutes.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Come back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 34 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbite. I said before the break that I was going to talk about Duck.com. One of the things I particularly like about Duck.com is that you can set up an email address at Duck.com that connects to a real email address that you own. So when you say, you know, I do not have this email address, so don't send mail to it. It's not me. But if I were to say nick@duck.com, it goes to nick@duck.com and then goes to nick@soundbites.org, and I get it there. When I send it back, it sends it back through duck.com, and in the process, strips out, on the way in, it strips out cookies and trackers and all of that stuff, and on the way out, it strips out where it really is coming from. So it's a fairly anonymous email address. You can still get spam at it because they know that address. But they don't know who you really are, and they can't get at your computer with trackers or any of that other stuff. So if you're looking for a fairly anonymous free, at least up to now.
Last time we talked about it, it was in beta. Yeah, it's still in beta.
Yeah, still in beta.
Well, because it's still dated. The web page is dated August of 2022.
Yeah. But you can get a free email account from them, and it will protect you from being tracked. Similar to the way their Duck browser protects you from being tracked as well. So... for my money, it's great. I use it, for a lot of one-time things. You know, I want one piece of, I'm sign up for, you know, this website, in order to get our newsletter. Okay. It's, you know, me at duck.com and now it can't find me anymore. I get no trackers.
You can turn it off again as easy as you turned it on.
Right. I get no trackers. I get no nothing, and it all works perfectly. So
iCloud has this feature built in called Hide My Mail,
right?
Where you can generate a random email address that then forwards to your real iCloud address. So anyone using iCloud, Mac or Windows, or even Unix, can get an @iCloud.com fake address to go along with their real iCloud.com address. Yeah. So it's kind of handy to be able to do fake addresses for things like that.
Yeah. So you can get the email. There's an extension, or you can just sign up for helps protect your email. But you can use the Duck.com email forwarding. And I personally, like I said, I use it anytime I have to sign up to something. I do it through my duck.com account, and I never hear from them again because I get no trackers. I get no cookies. They can't find me. They can certainly send email to that account, but then I can block that account. So it all in the real email address that I receive it at. So. Yeah, it's pretty cool. I recommend it for anybody who wants a little more security on the internet. Like we've said a million times, nothing is 100% secure. One of the problems that people don't seem to understand about VPNs is, yes, you're protected from the VPN out. Nobody knows who you are. But the VPN still knows who you are. They have to in order to send you your traffic. You cannot be anonymous to the VPN. So the real question is, which VPN do you trust? Because they will be able to read all of your stuff. They will be able to track where you go. They would be able to sell that information to somebody else. So who do you trust? I think it's Proton VPN. Is that the name of it?
I know there's Proton Mail for fully encrypted end-to-end mail.
Yeah, no, there's a Proton VPN as well, and they're always rated pretty high. They've been audited a number of times.
ExpressVPN, too, is another one.
Is another one that's been audited. Yeah. But, you know, the more common ones, and I won't mention their names, that you hear about all the time.
That are free.
That are free, are simply not actually secure. They can read all your stuff. They can sell your information. They can do whatever they want to do with you. But, you know, Proton VPN and ExpressVPN do have audits done regularly that prove they're not tracking you. They don't keep your information.
The VPNs are actually spun up on a RAM disk, and as soon as you disconnect the VPN, the RAM is flushed.
Yep, so there's no way that they can get your log. You know, I've toyed with the idea of running my own VPN, and then I would know, but I would have to put that somewhere. Mm-hmm. And wherever I put that has a Whois address that's related to me.
Yeah.
So, you know, okay, fine. I suppose I could run it for other people, but I've thought about it. I've never done it.
And most residential internet services have a clause where you can't run a server.
Right.
So you can't run a VPN server, a mail server, web server. Most of them block port 25 for email, VPN. I used to run a VPN on my home computer so I could get back into it when I needed to.
Sure.
Until I switched to a new internet provider who blocks VPN services. So now I use Tailscale, which is an overlay network.
Right.
That acts like a VPN. It's open source and free for non-commercial use. I'll post a link in a minute. And that lets me get to my computer back home and access a file on it that I forgot to copy if I needed or something like that.
Right.
And that's basically what the intent of a VPN was, is that you can connect to another computer as if you were sitting there in front of it.
Right. And so for companies or for schools or whatever, you can log in from home and it's just like you're sitting at your desk.
Yep.
That's the reason for VPNs. And that traffic is secure, and you already gave a bucket load of your information to the company you work for anyway, so then none of that matters.
And you're probably using a computer they own.
Right. So that, you know, that's what that's all about, and that works out really well. That's what a VPN was designed for. But now using it to hide yourself on the internet, nothing will hide you 100%.
Yeah. All those TV commercials are trying to sell you something, and they're not exactly true.
Right. And as Steve said, even if you're on the Tor network, the government runs Tor nodes. So they can catch you if you happen to hit their node. And an awful lot of people do. So the reality is that you've got very little privacy on the internet. You know, give it up. You just don't have it. Don't do anything on the internet you don't want to see in the 6 o'clock news.
Or you'd want your mom to find out about.
Or you'd want your mom to find out about. I don't care if the world knows, as long as mom doesn't know.
Yeah.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Richard from Irondequoit, New York. What's up, Richard?
Man, there is such an echo. I got three speakers playing your show, and everyone is on a different wavelength or whatever. I've got Windows 11 on my laptop. Revo uninstaller is opened up, and I've got the whole list of websites that are appearing on the screen. Are those to be uninstalled? Give me a lesson on how Revo works, would you?
Okay, Revo uninstaller. Instead of say you pick any program, Adobe. You install Adobe Photoshop and that, and you want to get rid of it because you found something bigger and better.
Yeah, right. What
you would do is then go into Revo Uninstaller, select that program, say Uninstall. Now, it's going to go through some iterations, and it's going to clean up some stuff behind the green screens. And then all of a sudden, it's going to pop up a window. And it's going to say, oh, I found all this stuff. And there's going to be a button, two buttons on the left-hand side. The first one is select all. The next one next to it is delete. So you go ahead and delete that. What that's basically doing is deleting all the stuff on your hard drive.
For that program you want to get rid of.
Yeah. And then the next screen popping up is going to be all the stuff in your registry. And again, you're going to have two buttons on the left-hand side. It's going to be select all, delete. Now, don't be surprised, though. Once it's done, it says, oh, wait a minute, I couldn't do them all. I need you to reboot the machine to complete the task. That's okay.
Those things are running in the background that can't be deleted.
They've got locks in there, and they can't release them until you restart the machine. That's okay. You can still continue on doing other stuff. Just the end of the time, the day when you're going to go eat dinner or whatever, restart the machine.
But you're seeing a list of websites on the screen? It should be a list of applications.
Okay,
well then we'll call them applications.
Yeah,
no,
on the left hand side should be all the programs.
Yes, they are programs.
Yeah, you select the one that you want to uninstall.
Specifically, it's the Canon. A lot of software, 5 or 6 different little bits of Canon stuff, which I wish to install because I don't have that printer anymore. And I've tried uninstalling it with Revo, and it still appears. So I must be doing something wrong with them. Should I right-click on it and delete that way?
It's still on the desktop, you mean?
Yes, it appears along with the other programs.
Yeah, sometimes it doesn't always clean up the desktop. So those.
No, he's talking about the list.
It might leave the folder behind, but it deleted the file, the program application inside the folder.
But make sure when you're deleting the program, though, like I said, there's two operations. When it brings you that whole list of stuff that it found, you got to first click the button on the far left that says select all.
Well, he doesn't want to delete everything. He wants to delete only the Canon stuff.
After you click on the Canon line.
What he's doing is running the scan on just that program. In other words, you go
and then it comes up and says, here are all the pieces.
Yeah, here's all the pieces. Okay. So you select one program. Say, all right, the Canon. You select the Canon program. It'll start scanning it and it's looking for all the stuff, gathering the information. Then it's going to open up a window. And in that window, it'll show you all these things and the trees that it's underneath.
The pieces related to that program.
On the left-hand side, down at the bottom, it says select all. You have to select them all. And then next to it, to the right, is delete. You have to delete it. And then go ahead and say exit out. It might take a couple more seconds. All of a sudden, another window is going to open up. And it says, we found this stuff in these folders. And you get the same option. Select all, delete. And then you're done.
In that order?
Yep.
In that order?
Yep.
Okay.
But you have to, just because it finds them all, you just can't say okay, because it's not going to get rid of the program. You've got to tell it, because it wants, it sort of double checking to make sure that this is what you really want to do. So
all of this that you're saying is familiar. I've seen all of these things.
Yep.
So thank you. I've been working on getting rid of the Canon thing, but I have to do the next step, as you are saying. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. Glad we could help.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks.
Yeah, the newer version, right now with the unpaid version, which we always tell folks, you usually wind up getting a little more with the paid versions. In this case, with the paid version, which isn't really that expensive, you can, instead of, say, like he said, he had a bunch of Canon programs, 5 or 6 of them, because they'll put in the Stores app and all this other stuff. With the paid version, you could sit there and select. Say there were 6 items. You could select all 6. Say, delete or uninstall. It will do all 6. You don't have to go do one, then come back, do another one, come back. It'll get rid of all six of them, and it'll walk you through it step by step.
Nice product.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's, and there's other features to it, too. You, we've talked about how some computers wind up getting a lot of bloatware. There is a part of that program you can sit there and look at other installed items on that computer when it's brand new that are, you know, sort of hidden, but maybe not installed yet because they put it in there and you got to install it. It'll get rid of that stuff off the hard drive, clean up the hard drive. So there's a lot of good features in it. Check it out, though. You can, again, try the regular Revo, and then look over the explanations on what you get when you go to the paid version. Myself, since I have like six different computers in the house, what I've done is I've gotten what they call the portable version. I put it on a flash drive. This way, I can go to each one of my computers with this, just this one copy, and run the program on any one of them. Because it puts, the minute I put it in a computer, it opens up that folder, says run, it will run it on that machine. And then I can go to the one next to it, next, and I only had to buy one copy.
Yep. And
it's things like this that should be built into Windows. But that could be said of any program. So that's a third-party opportunity.
Right.
So, in the Apple world, every time Apple adds a feature of some third-party product is always used, we end up calling that Sherlock. It's been Sherlocked because there was a program called Sherlock that did a really great search routine. It would search your computer and search the web and give you results altogether. Apple added that feature in, and the poor guy lost his program because now it's built. So now, a lot of times, there will be similar features to what's built in, but the third-party app does it more and better. One of the things coming in Sequoia is the ability to move your windows automatically into corners.
Oh.
We can do left and right now, but we can't do corners now. So there's third-party programs that do that already. And people say, well, yeah, Windows has been done that for a while. Yeah.
So is Linux.
So is Linux, yeah. But even though they're there, we still see people ask, how do I do that? Well, you just click on that button and it does it for you. Oh, I didn't know that.
Yep.
Too many hidden features.
Too many hidden features. All features are hidden now. There's no manual. Yeah. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Rita from Pittsford, New York. What's up, Rita?
Hi, Nick. I'm actually from Victor.
Okay, that's allowed. What's up?
I'm having some problems with the contact on my LG phone. The contacts work, but when I go to update or add new contacts, it just completely stops. I've been on the phone with Verizon, and they say that it's actually a problem with the LG phone, and there's nothing that can be done. I don't believe that. Is there anything that can be done?
So you have how many contacts you currently have?
About 300.
Okay, and when you say it stops, what does that mean?
It means that contacts works. I can get in and use it to use the contacts to find a phone number and click it. But if I try to add a new contact or if I try to update a contact that's already there, it just the app just stops. It says suddenly stops.
Unfortunately, contacts have stopped.
Yeah.
You get the screen? Yeah. What LG phone is it?
It's a stylus. I think it's a 5.
Okay. So this is an old problem. So I just found a question on the LG 850 from 2016. And their answer was erase the phone and reinstall the operating system. Basically start over.
Wow.
And that was on Android Central. So maybe, do you know which operating system it's running? Maybe an update to the OS would fix it?
Well, it's an Android, and I keep running the updates, so it says everything is up to date. I checked that. I did a reset. I did, like, all of the steps that you do for something when an app is not working, and this just won't. It won't work again. Are there any other contact applications? Verizon. And I was on the phone with Verizon for a very long time.
Yep, I just found another one that said disable Verizon Cloud. And it will let the contacts app work. All right, so there's the question. Is this Verizon contacts or Android contacts?
It's on the phone, so I think it would be the LG. It's
Yeah. Right. You might want to try putting all of those contacts into Google Contacts.
Okay. Yeah.
As opposed to LG. Google. It may be that your storage on Verizon's cloud is full.
Okay. Well, yeah, I checked that and it's not, but yeah. Uh-huh.
But, you know, one of the things that we've always seen as a problem is each carrier has their own set of, each phone company has their own set of apps, right? So if you get a Samsung phone, it automatically defaults to Samsung Contacts. And if you get an LG phone, it automatically defaults to LG Contacts. But
that's what Verizon said. They said it's the manufacturer. It's not something they can do anything about.
Right. But what is generally better is using Google's own contact system. Again, given the caveat, do you trust Google, blah, 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 blah. But the point there is that you can put in way more contacts, and they're saved to the 15 gig of cloud storage that Google gives you, as opposed to the 2 or 3 or 5 gig that everybody else gives you.
Okay. I'll try that.
I don't know if you can convert Motorola contacts to Google contacts.
Or export from LG. LG export contacts. So sometimes you can export from one app and import into the other app.
Oh, well, it does back up to Google. Is that what I need to be doing? I mean, do I just restart the whole thing and then pull in the contacts from there?
Well, if you install the Google Contacts app, it may ask if you want to import the contacts from your existing LG app.
Okay. Got it. So I've got to get the app. All right.
Yeah. Give that a try. It should hold. Again, it may just be that you're out of space.
So turning off Verizon Cloud may be the first step to make it work. And then then we'll want to store them locally or store them on Google.
Right, but the question is what else has she got stored in the Verizon Cloud and et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. But I would start there.
Okay. Sounds good. Thanks
all right.
So much, Nick.
Good luck.
Thanks, everyone.
Yep, have fun.
Bye.
There in Victor. The problem really is that so many of these places give you free storage, but it is very limited amount of free storage. And you'll put all your pictures there and all your texts and all your email and everything else. And while Google doesn't give you a lot, it does give you 3 times as much as anybody else. So I prefer personally to use the Google apps because they give me much better storage space. You know, I've got, normally you get 15, but back in the early days, they had various incentives you could do to gain another gig here, another gig there. So I've got 19 gig of disk space. And I'm actually only using about 4.5, maybe by now 5. And I've got tens of thousands of I've got over 50,000 documents in Google Docs. But in terms of the stuff I store, pictures and all of that stuff, it's very little and it's taking up very little space. And, you know, like I said, nobody gives you a lot, but Google gives you 3 times as much as anybody else for free. So, you know, if you have the opportunity, instead of using the Samsung apps or the Motorola apps or the Verizon apps, use the Google apps and get more storage space. That music tells us that we are done for another week. You know what? We had great callers this week. I want to thank each and every person who called in. They were terrific. Even twice, they were terrific. Even the Deja Vu fellows are terrific. I want to thank Dave Enright and Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. You've been listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That would be Soundbites, right here on the truly great and truly grateful to you that we continue to be solely member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you in just 166 hours.